Hey, welcome back to the show. I'm here today with my guest, Corinne LeBrun. Corinne, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Travis?
I'm fabulous, as always, as you might expect. It's the Monday after Father's Day. I'm enjoying a ice water. My wife got me these massive ice cube molds. Have you seen these for like cocktails and whatnot? This thing
I
is enormous.
have. They're really fun.
Yes, we watched a video online after she bought them. She bought me four of these things. We watched a video, but this guy was not able to get it in all these different size cups. And we were like, we don't even know if they're going to work
Oh,
in our
yeah.
glasses. And I lined up six glasses this morning and only didn't fit in one of them. So I just don't think this other guy understands how, physics and geometry works.
But you know what I've done is I take the little tongs, the cooking tongs, and then just hold it under hot water for a little while until it actually fits the glass.
You see, that's one of the things I like about you, Corinne. You have unconventional approaches to solve conventional everyday problems. You've actually done some work as an executive director for the Alliance for Innovation in Science and Technology Information, a CFO for Verified Voting Foundation, and the director for Mental Health Contractors Association. You've done actually quite a bit of things, and you are definitely the Renaissance woman. You can find it on your current projects at livecreatively.love. But tell us a little bit of how you got started in the nonprofit industry.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a great story. I was actually working with startups at the time and was looking for something more challenging. And I found an ad that talked about science, technology, physics, digital information, advancements in computers. And I thought, I don't really understand this job description, but it sounds really interesting and like a puzzle. And so I answered them with my resume and they were looking for a director at the time, an executive director. Lo and behold, I got a call back and through a series of interviews, next thing I know, I was the executive director of the Alliance for Innovation in Science and Technology Information. So that's how it actually started, through curiosity, going, this looks really interesting because it looks like a puzzle I want to solve. And I'd never worked for a nonprofit before that.
Oh, that's really cool. Curiosity is what killed the cat and also brought you into nonprofit work. That's interesting.
Yeah, and one of the reasons they hired me is because I actually had a business background and it helped startups before, and they were a very small nonprofit and they wanted to grow. And they figured have someone with a business mind in there instead to try something different.
Oh, absolutely. What really grabs me about the story is we were chatting when we first met, and you were talking about the things that you had done in nonprofit work. And I feel like a lot of nonprofits suffer from the way that you were feeling. You don't feel like you had actually contributed that much to the nonprofit world. In reality, you took the Alliance for Innovation in Science and Technology Information from 40 grand a year up to $3 million and started an endowment. You did that in under 3 years. That's astronomical. That's insane. It's a huge thing. And the fact that they didn't make you feel loved and acknowledged and like you made an impact in their organization just blows my mind. And just stacking on the list of things that bothers me about some nonprofits and the way they do business. How could they have not kept you for years and years and years and years and celebrated you and everything that you did through doing that? 40,000 to 3 million? That's insane.
Oh, wow. You know, it was a group of libraries, science and technology libraries, you know, out of the national laboratories, some of the universities in New Mexico. And everyone from there came from an academic background. So it's just a very different mindset of how to go about developing a nonprofit and how to develop a business. So it's like different skill sets are valued differently. For example, the 40,000 was what they had with their membership dues. That's what came in from that. And then how I managed to scale it was they had a project that they said, oh, well, we'd like to implement this, but we think it's way too complicated. So it was like something somebody had thought of, but really didn't want to do. So I think that's because I was able to just take it and go, oh, well, let me figure out this puzzle because I like puzzles. You know, I think that's where that comes in, like, oh, wow, hey, now we get the puzzle solved. And I guess I should probably talk more about how that was done with a membership organization.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that people talk about knowledge being power, And there's been some different discussions and different schools of thought on these. This is not something that I came up with, but knowledge is really potential power because it doesn't mean anything unless it's put into practice. All the people, like, I'm an idea guy. I've got a couple dozen solid ideas every single day. I write some of them down. Some of them are fleeting thoughts that come into my world, but very few on them do I act on. But I am a person that takes action. So I do take a few of these and really go down the rabbit hole and try to take action on some of these things. But the vast majority of people will have information and they will have knowledge and they will just simply not put it into action. And the only difference, there's no difference between someone that can't read and someone that won't read. They're both still as uninformed as the other, regardless of their ability level. So the fact that you were to take these ideas that were shelved and basically collecting dust and implementing these in order to create some additional programs and other reasons for people to get on board, that's fantastic. I'm so glad that you did that.
Thank you. You know, and I think the reason I'm able to do things like that is because I'm an out-of-the-box thinker, A, and B, I'm not afraid to fail because I fail all the time. It's like things, I try stuff and it just doesn't work. And then I try and I'm like, oh my God, this actually worked. So it's being a natural implementer, being able to see the forest and the trees, and then just getting excited about the process of like, well, how do I take this idea? And I could see all the puzzle pieces of how to actually implement it. But those puzzle pieces, for example, with this project required, I'd have to just backtrack for a second. So what it was, an Information Science Library Association for Special Libraries, and special libraries are ones that they catered to the scientists, so like national laboratories and academic universities. And if you want information for the scientists, you actually have to pay the publishers for that. The large publishers like Springer, Elsevier, and there are like so many more out there these days. Then you have to pay for those. And so what this organization did is it aggregated all of these institutions in order to purchase this information more cheaply, you know, in a more cost-effective way, because everybody has their budgets. And there was, you know, the Air Force Research Laboratory had an enormous budget of what they needed to get. But the thing is, they paid a whole outside institution to organize every single one of these deals for them. And I thought, well, I could actually do that. Instead of them paying this outside agency 8%, they could just pay us 3%. Why not? On a multi-million-dollar contract, that adds up to be a lot of money. So I ended up doing that. I had to figure out how to create a government contract for that. It was just talking to people, talking to their government contracting office, figuring out how do you actually fill out the forms, you know, them holding my hand, negotiating with them, you know, why go with this vendor instead of that vendor? So I was like doing the whole nine yards. And that was the piece that was the challenging puzzle to solve, plus the negotiations. But I saw it as something fun because before that, I had actually also done, let's call them risky things with fundraising where people can say no, but what the heck? So I did, that's how come I was able to implement that, basically a follow through and then piggyback a bunch of other aggregate projects on top of that, that ended up being a lot of revenue for the organization and ended up generating quite a lot of, let's say, commissions, which is very unusual to have in a nonprofit. But those commissions off those larger deals is what ended up fueling this entire endowment we had, which we then created grants to give people to further the mission and vision of the organization. So yeah, that's how that whole thing came about.
You say it like it's no big deal because you had curiosity. You thought it was a cool puzzle and it was fun to solve. How far do you think nonprofits could get if they changed the way they looked at what they were doing to involve your approach?
One of the things I've learned about nonprofits since then, because that was my first real interaction with a nonprofit, is what I learned is nonprofits, unfortunately, have the mindset of meaning, oh, we're actually not allowed to make money, because if we make money, then it will no longer be a nonprofit. So it's an interesting conundrum. I said, well, then if you're trying to do good in the world, if you're not making money, how can you do that if you're not making any money? Or another thing that really holds nonprofits back is, oh, well, people should only be volunteers and they should not get paid. And if that's happening, then you have people who are not going to really be able to dedicate themselves because they're too busy trying to make a living. So they won't be able to dedicate themselves to the mission and vision of the organization. So really one of the first goals is to figure out a way to get your base staff paid so they can fully, entirely focus on the mission and vision. And so therefore you need funds for that. And one of the biggest things I've always told anyone involved in a nonprofit is don't think of it as a nonprofit. Think of it as a for-profit business. However, your profits are all going towards your mission and vision. Of course, you pay your salaries in accordance to, you know, now they have different suggested levels based upon your state or federal government. Each state is different. Federal government has their standards.
There's no restrictions on pay. People forget that things like Delta Dental, an insurance company, is a 501c3. And that CEO made $22 million a couple of years ago.
That's amazing. I did not even, I guess they must have changed some of the rules.
The NFL was a nonprofit through 2015. They're talking about billions of dollars.
Wow.
People think of nonprofit and they think of no profit. They think of charity. They think of all the ways that make them sad on the inside. And really, I just had an interview with someone that said, hey, we need to get rid of that word nonprofit. If we said 501c3 instead of the word nonprofit, it changes the dynamic of how we think about the organization that we're a part of. And I'm a huge fan of thinking that mindset and the way that we look at whatever the thing is changes exactly how we interact and show up. There's no rule about how much someone could, should, or would make in a nonprofit unless they're only looking at it from a guilt lens. If you can pay your fundraiser $2 million a year and that guy can bring in $900 million a year, wouldn't you believe the $2 million a year is worth it? Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm glad that they changed the rules on that, because I think a lot more social good can be done when people can be paid well for their efforts. And then you have even more, it's really like a mindset of abundance. So then there's even more money to go around to actually forward everything that the nonprofit wants to do. So yeah, but you're asking, you know, how can a nonprofit really utilize the whole perspective of innovation and thinking out of the box and looking at things as, you know, to be able to, like, how are you going to make money? It's like really looking at it that way. There's so many different ways to do it as a nonprofit.
There is tons of ways. I talk to people that have, like Bruce Rosenthal, who talks about how to co-brand a study related to a topic, co-brand it with a bank and a nonprofit. You have 50 participants. All those 50 participants now use that study and the results of to promote your nonprofit. And charging the bank to do so, they're using their marketing fund instead of their philanthropy fund, which is a lot larger, using their marketing fund of how to promote that out there. We've got people like Will Black is sharing the credit that does credit card processing that allows you to take 40% of the back end fee as a donation, unrestricted, no rules attached to it, donation to your nonprofit. There's so many different ways to raise money. We've got people in Oklahoma City, Not Your Average Joe's Coffee. They're running a done side by side with people with different disabilities like Down syndrome, and they're operating a coffee shop specifically to fund the work the nonprofit is doing. There's so many different ways to do this. I've got friends in Texas. I can't think of the guys. I think what Sergeant Ritter is the gin company, gin or vodka, is using that to fund his nonprofit, Operation Phantom Support. There's so many different ways to fund these things. We've got so many people with the hat in hand and the sad story, and they're jingling their cup, hoping to get a couple of nickels, that they're not willing to figure out ways to bring in the real money. So I'm really glad that you were able to find a way to compete for a government contract. They got you 3% and save them 5% of their budget to use towards what they're actually supposed to use it for. You save them money, you accomplish your mission. And now this nonprofit doesn't exist, right? Because they actually accomplished their mission.
Yes, exactly. The mission is so interesting. I don't know if I remember the exact words because it's been a while, but it was to be able to digitize scientific information and allow scientists to have easy access to this information. And so we used to like have, you know, summits on things like digital object identifiers, DOIs, things we use now whenever you're looking for a scientific paper. One of the very first ways to where people searched on Google, that algorithm was actually created out of Los Alamos National Lab, you know, which was one of our member libraries that also had to do with this organization. So they did a lot of work behind the scenes as well, you know, developing search protocols. Like we see things like, you know, a JPEG is a JPEG. Like, why do you call it that? You know, like what's a PNG file? So those different things were also being created behind the scenes and let's say more the think tank aspect of the organization. But what ended up happening is over time, well, wow, we don't need to aggregate this information anymore because now it's all available online easily at more reasonable prices to member libraries. So yeah, then I forgot how many years they're actually in existence, but they ended up, yeah, it's like we fulfilled our mission. That's it.
See, I think more nonprofits, 501c's, charity, not-for-profit, whatever we're calling it today, need to be focused on actually accomplishing their mission and setting up the systems, programs, policies, and procedures in place so that thing doesn't happen again. There's organizations that we've interviewed like Community Solutions and Built for Zero where they've created a functional zero for homelessness in 18 different cities in the U.S. Functional zero means there's more housing available than there are people on the streets, but you can't force someone to get into a house. But they've created a functional zero in 18 communities. That's insane. It's amazing how that works. They're working to actively solve the problem, combined it with other agencies that are working towards the same goal, trying to work themselves out of a job. I've got to ask you, if you're listening to this right now and you're doing something that's been worked on for decades, is your organization actually working to solve the problem? Or are they only working every year to raise more money to pay more people to continue not solving the problem next year? Mm. You've done so many other amazing things outside of the direct benefit for the nonprofit world. I know you help people and businesses write pitch decks to get funding. I saw that you did this week in a great photo shoot. You were a model for Meraki Allure. What are some of these other things that you're spending your time doing, Kareen?
So I'm actually an author as well. I have a book out called A Handbook for Badass Spiritual Warriors. And those are time-tested tools I've used over the years to really stay connected to my soul, no matter what's going on in the world. You know, it's everything from meditation, prayer, I call it internal house cleaning, because we need to do that every now and then in our lives. So I have that book. I have a second book that's in process as well called Infinity Within. That's, I'd say probably 80% done, that one. I am also working on my PhD part-time, and that is only because I'm a nerd and I really like to research. I stopped working on my PhD for a while because I thought I don't need this, but then I really miss the research. And it's like, I love digging into information saying, is this really true? You know, it's like, let me see if this factoid that I just heard is really true. And then passing on the information to people. So that's part of what I do with my workshop educational programs. And so that's another thing I'm doing with my Live Creatively business, is I help people learn how to look at the world in a more innovative and creative way by tapping into that peace within themselves. And that's really truly, you're just tapping into your own soul by figuring out what are the things that really like light you up in the world? What makes you feel passionate? Like what gets you excited? Like what are the doorways to that creative energy? And then how do you consistently access that? So consistently accessing that are tools I've put together that's all based on scientific research. And then some of the tools to maintain that and also really access your intuition. Like I have a whole system that I've put together for people as well. So those are things I really love doing. So those are some of the things I'm doing. And also it's like I'm a belly dance fusion performer. I'm learning fire dancing, dabble in painting. I've written stories. Like I have a screenplay that I've written, and the list goes on and on because I love being creative. And that's something else I'm love passing on to people is.
Well, you've also acted in Hollywood. You used to have your SAG card, right?
Yeah, I did have, I have my SAG card. It's not active at the moment. I was in a TV show called Lazarus Man from like eons ago. I was in one of their episodes and did a lot of voiceover work. So that's how I earned my SAG card. And I was in a little short film at one point called Le Deux de Love. It was a spoof on French films. It was very funny. So
I don't think that people in the U.S. in this day and age give themselves a lot of free time or the ability to just be themselves. It's almost like they need to ask permission to live their life and enjoy doing what they're doing. Like, I love meeting people, connecting with people, helping people understand, you know, who they are and really transform, even if it's in a moment or two, to try to understand like what is really happening, really to shift their perspective on how they're looking at something. We had a call, you and I had a call in this past week where you're kind of belly aching about something. And I was like, well, didn't you tell me on the call before this that you were loving, you were just hoping for feedback in this area? And we just all need to be reminded a little bit of all these little different things in order to help keep us on the right path.
Oh yeah, exactly.
It's crazy to think that so many people are out there are doing so many good things and just feel beat down by society, that they don't feel they have the time, the ability, the energy, the effort to be themselves, that they have to get up every day and put this mask on and show up in the world as who they're supposed to be or who they should be. And when they finally realize what they're able to do based on who they really are, that it's no holds barred, it's 10x, 20x, 100x, what they ever could have done with the mask on, because they're finally living their true selves.
Now, I find like being, allowing yourself to be creative, because everybody is creative and it's a habit to just keep it up. It's like anything else. It's like, I really believe that that's the key to like feeling more yourself. Like, I know when I feel really creative, I'm like, ooh, I feel totally, completely me. And it's, and anybody else I know too has that. Have that feeling. It's important, you know, to, you can't be yourself, and it's like life is a bit challenging.
Well, I mean, that people are scared, right? Because if you show up as yourself, then there's going to be people that don't agree with you. There's going to be people that you offend. There's going to be people that discovered that you guys were never friends, that you were just placating them and just bending to their will, essentially following their rules, trying to make them feel happy, regardless, you know, at sacrifice of self. And when we rise up as the people that we were designed and meant to be and actually are as human beings, not human doings, but human beings, we start living unapologetically ourselves. We discover that we might not be in the right circle of people. We might not have the right group of friends. We might be in the wrong industry. We might be at the wrong level. Too many people that I know, doesn't matter how you describe them, age, sex, religion, whatever, however you describe somebody, they're holding back based on something that they think is real, some boundary that they imagine to be true. How do you see this showing up in your world?
I think having the right people around you, first of all, is really important to reflect, to have the circle of friends who can reflect back who you really are, because then you can really be yourself. And that's a gift to have something like that. Because otherwise, if you are in a situation where you're going into a social situation where people expect you to be a certain way and you don't show up in the way that they expect you to, it's like you become ostracized. And it's like, we don't want that, because as human beings, like literally we are wired for social connection. So we are wired to socially adapt. And one of the things I found in my research, which was fascinating, was when we experience rejection from a social group, it literally registers in the brain as pain, as physical pain. So it's really interesting, because we are wired for social connections. Of course, we're continuously around a group of people that does not reflect who we really are. It's like we're stifling ourselves, but we might actually adapt, because we don't want to be rejected. And it's even on a subconscious level. So it's like to become conscious of, is this circle of friends really who I want to be around? Is this really, does this really make me feel alive? You know, and I think about that for myself, you know, it's like say, pre-pandemic, you know, a little bit before that, like, was this social group that I'm around, did it really make me feel alive? Or did I feel squashed? Sometimes you can be around people who don't want you to be successful because it threatens them, or it threatens their idea of who you are, and it threatens their idea of who they are. So there's a lot to be said about that.
It's very interesting. What some people don't understand about group dynamics is if you heard something that describes you and the situation that you're in, if you can get one or two people in the group to start doing what it is that you want to do. Let's just say, for instance, that you're in a group of people, none of them have college degrees. In fact, they talk down about people that have been to college, and you really want to go to college, and you start doing it, and you're kind of scared of how the group's going to take it. If you can convince one or two other people to start doing a college class with you, you are going to change the dynamic of the group, and the rest of the group, as long as you get two or three with, you know, one or two people with you, you're going to get the rest of the group to change into that new dynamic. The big fear for the group is that by you changing, that they are going to lose you from the group. And if you can keep them engaged on the thing that you, on the journey you want to go on, you can change the group and get them to come along with you. Now, I say that like it's, oh yeah, anyone can do it. It's not easy. But if you can do it, if you can get a person or two to come along, you can change the group dynamic, and the people that are not willing to move forward with their life, take responsibility for what they're doing, become better people. Do you really want people that are not described that way in your group anyway? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I don't think you would be listening to my show if that described you as a person. I don't think if you thought everything was the way it should be and everything's going to go on the way and continue doing it, and you're going to go to work 40 hours a week and you're going to do it again the next week, and like that's okay for you, I don't think you'd be listening to the show. I don't think that would be describing you. I think you would have weeded yourself out from listening to my program over the weeks, months, and years that's been on the air if that didn't describe who you are. So if you're in the situation and you want to do something different, if you can convince the people to go with you, great. If you can't convince them to go along for the ride towards something new, something better, something whatever it is, then you've got to find a new group of people. Otherwise, you're just hurting yourself. Not that they're a bad group of people, but if they're not going where you're going, they're eventually either going to, you're going to break away, or they're going to pull you back down into it. And then you need to lose what, 3, 4, 5, 6 years on not pursuing your dreams because of some imagined social dynamic that you feel stuck in?
Yeah, it's really true. Yeah, I found myself even in some groups not talking about my education at all. Because whenever I did, it would be entirely squashed. Like it didn't matter. It wasn't anything to be proud of. As a matter of fact, it was looked at as like, oh, you're just trying to like make yourself important. And it's like, no. It's like, I just wanted to contribute to this conversation. I didn't say that out loud, but I sure felt like it. But it's that type of thing where if you find, I think if you have to squash any part of yourself in a group, and you're finding that if it's, you're squashing the artistic side of yourself, the intellectual side of yourself, the emotional piece of yourself, I mean, that as well, it's like anything. If you find you have to wear clothes that you're not comfortable with, because I've had that too, you know, that it's just really not the right close circle of friends for you to really flourish and grow and contribute to, and to really feel like a community, because like that's what we all want, to feel like we're part of a community that where people see us and we can contribute to and really feel a part of.
If you're not celebrating each other's wins, or you don't feel that your wins will be celebrated, you're in the wrong group of people. Plain and simple. If I do something that I've been working on and I achieve it, or I'm joining part of the journey, I get to that next step, and I tell my friends like, hey, I just did the thing that I talked about doing. If they're not saying, right on, keep going, I love you, I'm proud of you, keep going, like this is exciting, my goodness, why are you hanging around those people? Or if you hear later that they were talking about how crappy you are behind your back, burn the bridge. Run away, stay as far away from those people as possible. Good Lord, what are we doing? We all have this limited time on this little blue rock floating through space. And if you're wasting moments of your precious time that you can never recover with people that don't love, support, encourage, and help develop who you are as a person, as a spouse, as a parent, as a whatever you're trying to be, stop wasting your time. Get around the people that can support you. People like Corrine or myself, get around us or people like us or the people you're trying to be like, and build that group of people. Corrine, I've enjoyed every second of this conversation. I love what you did for the Alliance for Innovation and Science and Technology Information. I love what you've done in all other areas of life. What are some parting comments you would have for our guest today?
Oh, don't be afraid to try something new. It's like, and actually, make a list of 10 things that you've never done that you really wanted to do and at least try, even if it's go to a new restaurant nearby, try a new exercise program, or maybe it's travel somewhere, but make a list of 10 things and just try one of them. Because just by doing anything different, it actually like helps like rewire your brain, and it keeps you young as well. It just keeps giving you like an incredible, wonderful perspective on life to always be doing new things. That's my words of wisdom.
Hey, thank you so much, Corinne. If you want to hear more from Corinne, check her out on livecreatively.love. Thank you so much for being my guest today, dropping knowledge bombs and providing value to my audience.
Thank you, Travis. It's actually really great to be here today.
We'll catch you all next week. Every Tuesday, we're dropping a new episode of the Nonprofit Architect Podcast. Thank you so much.